So this is side two of session number 22, November 6, 2006. And I just mentioned the literate fragmentation away from the tribal dream time.
Yeah, and so then I was just pondering the fact that the dream time of tribal man was different from the dream time that we're experiencing today, because in tribal man, what we consider to be the irrational or illogical or nighttime disposition of mind was interrupted when visual space was built, because visual space split the mind between the daytime mind and the nighttime mind, regulating the illogical part of the mind into the unconscious. And then the when we get into the electronic surround, then this split is resolved.
Dissolved.
And the but now we're in a different dream time, because the mind's been sculpted by visual space, which hadn't occurred for a preliterate man.
Right, so we call postliterate man not tribal man, but mass man. Mass man is a product of all the different technological phases, which includes the individuation caused by visual space. So we have the hangover from the visual Gutenberg phase, which interferes with total immersion with the new electronic dream time. And so it's more than just entranced dream time of preliterate man. It is a complex, detached, and involved state of mind in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says, we being, that quote from page 299 of Understanding Media I read a little while ago, today when we live in a time of sudden transition from mechanical to electric technology, mechanical being visual with an unconscious, to electric technology, which is collective consciousness, no unconscious, it is easier to see the character of all previous technologies, we being detached from all of them for the time being. Preliterate man was not detached. And we're going to come up to a new definition of the unconscious,
mm-hmm.
just as we're trying to figure out what he means by consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Why is there this fascination today with the shaman of the Amazons and people going down to take the ayahuasca and experience it seems that the shamans down there know something about consciousness that we don't know about today.
Right, well, McLuhan would say that Picasso's interest in African art was a reflex reaction and a fascination with the preliterate sensibilities, which seemed to be the closest, thinking of McLuhan's tetrad, we retrieved under electronic simultaneity the values or familiarity and resonance of preliterate awareness, so it became a fascination of many modern artists 100 years ago. And then it follows through with the fascination in the mid-20th century with drug states of mind, and then you have the romanticization of a natural drug state of mind, which is the attraction of Amazonian tribal drug rituals. What you have here is people unable to live, as McLuhan said, the new thin cycle of totally interdependent man in the daylight of consciousness creates a time of great anxiety. So we can easily go back and experience the tribal preliterate dream time. It's exciting but non-threatening, because it is nowhere near the complexity and problems of the post-literate dream time. So we escape from the post-literate dream time's problems by embracing pre-literate dream time sensibilities, as Picasso did, and many artists in the 20th century. D.H. Lawrence, hanging out with the Native Americans in the 30s and 40s, and getting into peyote consciousness. That has been a theme all through the 20th century. What is not threatening becomes a form of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
It also, for people who are heavily conditioned by literate and industrial technology, need to have their consciences shaken up by pre-literate drugs and the dreamtime sensibility to get them percipient. That means to begin to perceive the electric effect. They're not ready to get comprehensive knowledge and understand the causes and effects of that environment. Most people have no problem with taking drugs in the 20th century because they feel it is an unconscious feeling, a result of the electric environment. They feel that it would acquaint them with the strange world of the electric age by replaying the surrealistic, quote-unquote, irrational world of preliterate rituals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of... McLuhan said in the 60s that psychedelic drugs may be the best art for people in the 60s. Music, painting, movies, and TV, those art forms, well, especially, I wouldn't say maybe movies and TVs, but traditional ballet, painting, music, the fine arts, were not strong enough, since they came out of literate man's sensibility, were not strong enough to provide a way of looking at the 20th century experience. But drugs met that power, and so the taking of psychedelics was the new art form. And art, in that situation, was an attempt to get a grasp of the present. But McLuhan had a broader understanding or new interpretation of art as the effect of huge media environments. So he was not trying to create an attempt to merge with the electronic effect, which he said pop art did. He was trying to point out more comprehensive situation of the causes and effects that made people feel these new pressures to experience the preliterate states.
Mm-hmm.
Once you became aware of that, you wouldn't be so driven to find resonating experiences in an attempt to understand the present. If you understood the present, you'd have a new understanding of the collective unconscious, which comes to the very last quote, the punchline quote. This is from Counterblast, came out in 1969, and McLuhan and Harley Parker wrote this. So on page 31, one of my favorite McLuhan quotes, he says, "All technologies are collective unconscious. All arts, science, and philosophy are anti-environmental controls that are ever merging into the environmental and losing their power to create awareness of environment. When arts fail to cope with the environment, by being anti-environment, they fail by being no longer anti-environment, then there can be a shift to a rapid succession of innovations as ersatz anti-environments or as fake anti-environments. So the rapid increasing nature of consumerism and fads in the 20th century is the need to get some anti-environment, some perspective on the situation. And you do it by going through a rapid succession of innovations, which upsets your sensibility, gives you a sense of being changed and endless change, and that approximates a way of getting an awareness of the environment, but McLuhan says it fails. But that's all we have at this point, unless you understand him. So all technologies create a new unconscious. So the unconscious of the 20th century is the electric effect, and then the satellite simulation of consciousness makes people run for preliterate expressions of the unconscious because they're unconscious of the technologies that make them retrieve images of the old unconscious.
I think that the serious investigators who go down to do ayahuasca with the shaman and to try to preserve their knowledge or translate their knowledge into terms that we can preserve, do so because they understand that the shamans are the healers, and that the shaman, actually good shamanic work is work that heals, like the work that Carolyn does. It somehow puts the voyager into contact with energies that are sort of miraculous in the sense that they regenerate health or recuperate health for a person who's becoming ill, either mentally or physically. That's that I think, gives some legitimacy to the desire to preserve the shaman culture, because everyone, you know, health is fundamental to life.
Well, that's the chemical body health. Yes, and the herbs and alternative healing techniques that we're discovering all over the world from different cultures, different traditions, are helping alleviate people from the stresses of electronic living. And more of the pharmaceutical companies appear to be failing in that endeavor. That retrieves the health for the chemical body, but then the chemical body has to deal with the newer landscapes, the TV and chip body landscapes, and understanding that the collective situation we're in is satisfied by another kind of knowledge, not herbal knowledge. Herbal knowledge just readjusts the chemical body, but dealing with the implications of a TV body and a chip body, those are my terms, but McClung would say dealing with the implications of the electrified, discarnate simulation of consciousness is a situation that requires other forms of knowing.
Yeah, but I think the shaman is more comprehensive than just the herbal knowledge. Here, take this and it'll make you better. He's saying, let's journey into this psychic dimension of spiritual resonance where you will be regenerated.
You'll be regenerated.
Your health will be regenerated.
I've noticed that many people who take treatments in alternative New Age retreats in all kinds of forms, including going down there, come back and are unable to maintain that sense of well-being, health, reconstituted sensibility in the long run, because they aren't aware of the pressures of the technological environment around them, which wear them down again, and they got to run back to the retreat.
Mm-hmm.
We need a new kind of mediocre or sensibility, a knowledge that doesn't erode whatever advantages you got by retreating to preliterate awareness rituals.
Well, is it possible to receive knowledge that would allow you to be impervious to the erosion of the environment? I mean, the environment's working on you regardless of what you know.
Yes, and you can more and more understand what it's doing. Because
and through understanding it, it offers you a kind of protection from it, do you think?
Yeah, and it also makes you understand why the general society you're living in is going through the chaos and confusion of its institutions. You have a clear way of dealing with those practicalities of collective life. Remember, media are social institutions. Healing your chemical body or your astral body or your private citadel of consciousness is one matter, but you have to deal with the collective community's need to know. And those forms of knowing are disrupted by new technologies. And understanding that gives you a clue to why things appear to be as chaotic or terroristic or violent or as utopian as they appear to be to people.
Mm-hmm.
It's dealing with environmental collective effects, which were not very wise. I saw an interview with somebody today where they said, well, we have the answers. We have the answers for this and that. And I hear this quote said a lot. Depending on which problem, most experts say, well, we have the answers. We just don't have the will. We don't have the political will to apply the answers. Well, the political will is anemic because of the collective unconscious effects of new technological environments. So you need to discuss those. This is McClellan's point. You need to discuss those effects so you can move towards why you don't have political will in the old form, and you need a new kind of political will, which would be neither prescient awareness, preliterate awareness, ESP, or visionary prophecy. It would be just understanding how our lives have been x-rayed to annihilation by the electronic world, which is leading to the audience of the intellect scrubbed from the decks, scrubbed from the cortex.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the people can sit around and talk about issues and come to an agreement, but they, as he said, here it is, page 56 of Understanding Media. Thus, the age of anxiety and of electric media is also the age of the unconscious and of apathy. But it is striking the age of consciousness of the unconscious in addition. So there are different unconsciousness. There's the tribal unconscious, the dream time. There's the literate unconscious, which is a private unconscious, which is basically suppressing the dream time previous experience of pre-literate man. And then there's the post-literate unconscious, which is unawareness about, we'll go to the quote above, why many people have begun to get very conscious about the unconscious, and people can manipulate the unconscious. TV experience favors much more consciousness concerning the unconscious than do the hard sell forms of presentation. So then what does he mean? You have these different levels of unconsciousness. So then you move to his final quote, all technologies are the collective unconscious. We now know what generates particular cultural unconsciousnesses.
I was watching some television commercials, which are getting pretty creative these days, and I was noticing the techniques that they were using to sell the product to capture your attention and to promote their products were methods that 30 years ago would have been manipulations of the subconscious mind. But now, as part of the audience, I'm conscious enough to be able to see what they're doing. And they know that I'm conscious enough to see what they're doing, so they're playing with it in a humorous way.
Yes, they are hoiking up what I call the value of a sense of humor. If they put a knowing wink to the audience, they know the audience would think that's a congenial form of awareness and accept the attempt to manipulate you, which would fail, other than the wink, which seduces you once again. It's a new level of seduction, the wink.
Right.
And that's the drama of cognition, the rapidity of interplay between the observer and the object gets so subtle and flips faster throughout the 20th century that you get to this super irony where they don't even attempt to manipulate you. And then that creates charisma. Because you say, oh, that's cool, they're not trying to manipulate me. Because where was that quote? He said, most of the 20th century is characterized by the manipulation of the unconscious. He says, it is strikingly the age of consciousness of the unconscious. The age of consciousness of the unconscious. But that's the old literate unconscious. As that was manipulated for 50 years, eventually the post-literate consciousness saw that they were projecting into the old literate unconscious, and therefore it could not be manipulated anymore. So he says the TV experience favors much more consciousness concerning the unconscious than do the old pre-TV forms of presentation in the hot media of press, magazine, movie, and radio. So it gets very subtle. How
hot media is more closely allied with visual space?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a transition from the mechanical to the electric. And it tends more towards the hot mechanical. Movie is not simultaneous like radio. The radio is just one sense, the voice and ear extended. And if you extend one sense, that's a hot medium. Cool media extend more than one sense, like television has more than one sense. So the press is eye, the magazine is eye, movie is kinesis, radio is acoustic. They're all semi-electric, but not completely tactile, like television is. Tactile being all the senses, therefore more cool. Here it is. And just why we are no longer content to have our... Just why we are no longer content to leave our experience in the subliminal state, that means the old literate unconscious state, and why many people have begun to get very conscious about the unconscious is a question well worth investigation, and is what McLuhan is always investigating. So why do people want to have the dreamtime experience? Because it seems to be a form of collective consciousness as a counter to impatience with the literate unconscious. People think they're becoming conscious by taking these ancient rituals. And that's the New Age lumped in a general term.
Mm-hmm.
So McLuhan in Gutenberg Galaxy satirizes the worship and retrieval of the primitive sensibility in 20th century culture. Wyndham Lewis did that too. McLuhan was, you know, very influenced by Wyndham Lewis. Wyndham Lewis used to criticize Joyce for celebrating the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
The stream of consciousness was the phrase for Joyce's Ulysses.
Mm-hmm.
Joyce's Ulysses novel.
Mm-hmm.
So while the old Finn cycles have been tribally entranced in the collective night of the unconscious, the new Finn cycle of totally interdependent man must be lived in the daylight of consciousness. And that's a hard thing to live in, and it will create apathy unless you understand what is creating the larger unconscious. So there's a new unconscious created by the Internet. There's a new kind of unconscious created by instant messaging.
Mm-hmm.
So applying McLuhan's tetrad, you retrieve previous unconscious artifactual environmental effects that resonate with the new technological unconscious, and they become fads. So in the 90s, in the time of the Internet, the fad was to act dumb. Dumbness is like putting on a previous form of unconsciousness. But the super audience sees through that, uses it as a playfulness to deal with the strange new collective membrane of daylight multi-level consciousness, which is very hard to live with.
Do these media unconscious unconsciousnesses relate at all to LaRouche's preconscious, or are they different subject matters?
They're different. The categories of McLuhan's definition of unconscious probably would not be agreed with by LaRouche, because he's dealing more with the chemical body. He's not talking about discarnate man. He said McLuhan was a media fetishist and exaggerated those effects.
Mm-hmm.
So you see McLuhan, you'll see LaRouche saying that he's not interested in popular culture. Well, McLuhan's whole agenda since he came back from Cambridge in the late 30s and started teaching students was to be interested in popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his book, The Mechanical Bride. That was the product of that interest through the late 30s and 40s. He then moved beyond pop culture into global cultural effects caused by technologies. So he went into a zone that was very different from LaRouche.
Mm-hmm.
And LaRouche could be charged with failing to understand the importance of McLuhan's contribution.
Well, I think it was last week we discussed the idea that LaRouche felt that the mariners, the guys who lived at sea, were more sober than the people who were
landlocked,
yeah, who were absorbed in the daily life of the civilization and the effects of civilization, media structures of their time, that they were sort of, I don't know if this is the right word, but kind of incestually involved with their own mythic imagination, whereas the guy at sea was involved in observing the stars and observing, having a clear observation of first nature and of the ruling and organizing principles underlying first nature. LaRouche considered this to be a more sober state of consciousness.
That's great. In the mobility, I'm thinking of this, the mobility of the maritime cultures, where they would move around and interact and not get locked into one little local zone, which then could be, you know, exploited by the landlords. The fluidity of the maritime cultures, the encountering different cultures, kept them maybe a little detached. What LaRouche would not understand is that we are now a discarnate, electrified maritime culture, what McLuhan called the new silent sea of the electric information environment. So we travel every day, in a mobile sense of LaRouche's maritime culture, through our discarnate electric media.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're in the water, a new water. Remember McLuhan's little note at the end of the book, War and Peace in the Global Village, 1968, he said, a message to the fish fresh out of the water. Well, it was out of a old water and in a new water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but LaRouche, I think, would argue that we're fascinated with perceptual processes, even if we're migrating around from one or cultural identity to another. We're still fascinated with perceptual processes, which is the motor mechanism of myth making, and this loss of this more objective awareness that we could have with first nature or the. You see where I'm going with that?
Oh yeah, McLuhan follows the Aristotelian methods. We've quoted several times McLuhan citing Joyce's technique as a replay of Aristotle's mimesis technique. Yeah, definitely McLuhan has gone the Aristotelian non-LaRouche path. And LaRouche goes for the higher hypothesis. It's almost like his celebration of ancient cultures' knowledge of astronomy. They're looking higher up to the sky, which is an eye-based culture in McLuhan's terms. But LaRouche's higher hypothesis is expressed by cultures who look to the stars. So that tends to get more abstract or not. It still involves the senses, but maybe it's not involved in the local senses. It's looking off in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a literate bias in LaRouche, a visual bias from McLuhan's point of view. But from LaRouche's point of view, McLuhan is embedded in an Aristotelian bias and an Aristotelian form of analysis.
Mm-hmm.
We, though, can be in the interval between the two. Just like we can see different cultures now and their biases and not identify with any of them, we can not identify with either school of thought that I present in the book here.
Well, do you think this puts Bob in a unique position which neither LaRouche or McLuhan were able to take advantage of?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I come later than them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, Carolyn can study medical technologies from all over the world, and other people can. So we have the advantage of studying herbs and therapeutic theories or methods from all kinds of different cultures that use herbs differently. That's just herbs. Whereas if you're just Chinese, you just live in China, you just study the unique Chinese modalities. If you're just a Westerner, you just study the allopathic or pharmacological basis. But if you're smart, you can use all the cultural national healing therapies and be comprehensive.
In a sense, you could say, well, we'll take the best from each. But in the process of taking the best from each, you may contaminate all of them.
That's right. But the mixture of these various forms creates a synergistic effect, you know, to quote Bucky Fuller, which leads to discovery of new hidden principles that no culture could have studied because they were stuck in their own bias. So the service of this is we may find underlying principles that none of each culture, which had a best in a certain angle, could have understood. So there we flip into the LaRouche idea. We move to a higher order of principles by looking at all the data and not getting embedded in them. And that's LaRouche's method, is not to identify too much with any particular symbolic system because it's just an approximation, a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
So the comprehensiveness of my book is to present the best from 20th century traditions and develop the awareness of using all of them.
So it just occurred to me that where McLuhan is talking, using tactility as a way of factor which is not any of the senses, but which balances the ratios.
No, interplays them.
Interplays the ratio among the five or six senses, but it's in the gap.
Yeah.
But now your new tactility, McLuhan's sensory ratios only represent 1/4
of my tactility.
Of your tactility, which balances, which uses the interplay of the sensory ratios in, but you're
different
in a,
memes.
You're in a gap.
Among memes,
among,
cultural memes.
Yeah, among television, astral, chemical, and
chip
bodies.
Yeah.
Hmm. So it's already pretty hard to contemplate all of the
individual themes I present through Croker.
How many variables are we dealing with when we look at the admixture of the sensory ratios of the chemical body? How many times is that multiplied when we need to now do that for the TV, the chip, and the astral body? It becomes unmanageable.
No, I think it's manageable. That's what I'm offering. If you pay attention, I'm developing quadrophenia as an art form.
Uh-huh.
Takes time. It's like a school. You've got to pay attention. Got to do the homework, which most people, unfortunately, today, just like they didn't have time to study LaRouche, Thompson, McLuhan, or Croker, they don't have time to study me, because the nature of our time, it's a cursed time, is the disruption that happens in everybody's lives, so they don't have the time to do this. So if you're lucky, you find the time somehow, and you get an inkling of the slack we're offering here.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's unique about you, and I think charismatic, is that you don't appear, maybe you do privately, but publicly you don't appear to exhibit the kind of angst, uncertainty,
paranoia.
Yeah, that the average person is trying to get themselves unstuck from.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's because
you ought to be the most paranoid of all of us, since you understand the reality of the paranoid circumstance in which we live.
Right. Some people said that super awareness drove McLuhan into the arms of the church. And I'm not saying that to get to that state that I appear to be in public is caused by losing your ego or becoming a super memorizer of facts. Whatever the different traditional cultural means of getting some kind of poise, for example, the Buddhism and mystical religions say you got to get rid of the ego. Some other culture might say do this or do that.
Some people might accuse you of having the biggest ego of anyone they ever met.
Right, because they're looking at me from the literate consciousness that is very sensitive to someone else expressing opinion towards them, and they think it's my opinion when I'm talking, and I'm talking in vast landscapes, vast generalities, that would appear threatening to the categorizing kind of mind, and yet they think that's my opinion. I'm just using words very strategically, scientifically, jargonistically, to indicate a way of swallowing vast data and landscapes of knowledge, so that there is hinted in LaRouche, Thompson, McLuhan, and Croker different schools. Like I said, Croker dances on the school of Marxism, Thompson dances on the toes of Buddhism, McLuhan dances on the toes of Roman Catholicism, and LaRouche dances on the toes of technological liberalism, or in quote science, humanistic science. None of those schools which offer solutions to the human angst are the way to deal with this new situation, and therefore going shamanistic or getting rid of your ego or becoming a politician or becoming a new scientist are not enough to get the poise in understanding the factors involved in our time. See, I'm pointing out that the Bob method is not to identify with the old solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Madonna. In the angst of her fame, whatever problems she was going through, she had to go to the Kabbalah. So she's celebrating whatever the Kabbalah means to people. Maybe it means getting rid of her ego. And she's still an image with a huge discarnate ego that is part of the economy, and she has nothing to say to that.
Mm-hmm.
So she's talking about the chemical body ego or the astral body ego.
Yeah.
So can you see how, if you talk the way I'm talking,
pretty hard to argue against the method that Jesus proposed, which is have compassion, love your brother and sister, go out and feed people, and take care of one another.
That's
pretty hard to argue against.
What?
I said that's pretty hard to argue against.
Well, I'm arguing against that. I'm saying that your chemical body can do that. And people do that all over the world. There's all kinds of charities and different attempts to help people and be kind and different. But people find it confusing that traditional ways of being decent don't work in the mixed media confusion. That's where the decent people get confused. They don't know why people aren't reasonable. They don't listen to common sense. Those are verbal statements of old cultural value systems that have nothing to do with the amazing environment we live in today, which is not just discarnate, but multi-bodied. And what you say is nowhere near. That's why we have such pollution of speech, such entertainment of speech mechanisms, like comedy. People swearing, yelling, and making jokes about statements is in hyper mode. I mean, we have a whole channel, a comedy channel, about that. People making fun of other people's verbal and body gestures and postures. That doesn't deal with the what McLuhan called the macroscopic gesticulation of cultural interaction going on. You can't use one language, like Finnegan's Wake. 50 languages, 60 languages a page, just to point to the problem. Can't use just one value system.
Mm-hmm.
What do we refer to if we can't use what our words refer to? Remember the poem by T.S. Eliot? I think it's in Sweeney Agonistes. The character says, "I got to use words when I talk to you." Mm-hmm. So you can use silence, but even silence is puny. The only way to deal with the macro environments we live in is to modulate them through the computer. And that's not likely to happen. So then you got to do some perceiving and contemplating about that situation and figuring out how to respond. So since speech is a puny environment, and if you talk a certain way and it sounds egomaniacal, megalomaniacal, then, and you know that's even puny, then I don't mind if I sound megalomania, because I know that's a puny environment. But the average awareness thinks that's megalomania, because they still believe that speech is the main ground.
Right.
So the very quiet program of laying out what I do in the book, or laying out in my ongoing interviews or dialogues, it's very patient explanation that intends to create a repository of work that people can refer to for probably another couple of hundred years. And if cold fusion breaks us through and we move into a zone where we're not in the harassed state we're in now, then my work stands as an explanation of why that happened.
Hmm. I had this dream the other night where someone handed me a paper that explained cold fusion, and I got this psychic hit of what it would be like to experience cold fusion reality. And I realized it's the flip side. It's the exact inverse of what we've been experiencing for the last 5,000 years or maybe more.
Yeah, that's what we mean. All society's been based on friction, winding down.
Yeah.
Entropy. We've never had a negentropy.
It would provide the coherence of consciousness and an emotional awareness, which would actually be truly satisfying, as opposed to sort of the sort of broken down machine it feels like we live inside of right now.
Yeah, did you say emotional satisfaction?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Emotional overtones, feeling tones, feeling states, coherent feeling states, and coherent states of feeling like you're at rest with the beauty of the cosmos, as opposed to feeling like you're struggling like a fish trying to swim upstream all the time.
But you would be at relative rest when you put on the battery and you never had to replenish it.
Mm-hmm.
That would give you a release of pressure. That's the emotional satisfaction.
Well,
you don't have to run out and chop the firewood. Now, some people might say, well,
let's fight over energy. It's the thing that
yeah.
we fight over.
Right. So some people might say, well, what am I going to do with my body? Well, that could cause a new angst. What are you going to do now that your body's not under pressure to be active? Now you've got to have a willfulness in what you choose to put your energy in. Now, the interesting thing is we have negentropy in the information environment, endless information. We have to pay for it through oil.
We have to pay through it through making an effort to you know, every time I pick up a book, I got to make an effort to read and read that material. I have to put an effort into understanding it, into bootstrapping myself to a higher level of understanding. That takes work.
Yeah, but it's work that's distracting from you satisfying the needs of your body for shelter and food. Once you have shelter and food satisfied, then you can have all the time in the world to master some mathematical problem or whatever book you're reading,
mm-hmm.
whatever puzzle you're working on.
Right.
See, that's the thing here, is that in terms of getting information, we got it all over the place. You can be endlessly titillated, but you can't do it. The environment there is giving it you 24/7, but you can't engage with it because you got to go back and pay the rent for your chemical body. So the Android meme offers the illusion of frictionless information environments, just endlessly there. But that ain't dealing with the whole spectrum of the body, and therefore...
Looking at this sentence that we read when we first started out tonight, ideally, advertising aims at the goal of a programmed harmony among all human impulses and aspirations and endeavors.
Right. Now, advertising, McLuhan had the phrase, advertising advertises advertising. That's a statement about the increasingly 24/7 information environment.
Right, but what I'm finding interesting about this is that nobody really experiences, unless they're very fortunate for some reason or another, people generally don't experience a programmed harmony among all human impulses, aspirations, and endeavors.
Yes, see, he's saying advertising...
We feel like we're struggling
to
get by.
Advertising is the handicraft version, handicraft method of a global media ecology where radio effects, TV effects are balanced by the global computerized thermostat. So all human impulses, aspirations, and endeavors are put into a programmed harmony. Advertising pretends to do that on a particular problem, say bad breath or a cold.
Mm-hmm.
You offer a product that solves that, creates a bit of harmony. That's puny handicraft solutions
mm-hmm.
and problems. But using handicraft methods, it mimes the global management of the media, global theater, toward the ultimate electronic goal of a collective consciousness. So if we do have a collective consciousness already in the 60s, the problem is to get people to understand they're in a massive extrasensory perception, which doesn't require speech.
Hmm.
So the...
And the Android meme is mirroring all of this.
Yeah. Android meme is all of this.
The Android meme, I think of it as being a sound light show. I mean, it's
that's television. The Android meme is satellite, computer, television, radio, newspapers, and books digitized and edited for you.
Mm.
For your either niche market or for you, increasingly you. We have YouTube. We don't have TV, tube, we have YouTube.
Maybe I'm on the wrong track, but I keep wanting to anthropomorphize the Android meme as though it's a simulacrum of the human being.
It is. That's exactly my definition. It is trying to be as human as possible. A big breakthrough leading to the Android meme was television, which was an expression of what the head sees externalized.
Yeah. Except that in the sense that a human being has a soul, it has no soul. It doesn't have human impulses, aspirations, and endeavors.
Look, a book doesn't imitate what I see. The camera of a live TV image imitates what I see. It's getting closer to my experience and replaying it back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And each media stage gets closer and closer. Now, television did that in the 50s. Then you had to have the interactive nature of television, where you interact and can communicate and message it as well as it responds to you. That's the Internet, getting more and more human, acquiring the condition of speech, which comes to that statement from 1953, where Joyce, years after he'd begun fitting his wake, before he saw that the babble of Aunt Olivia through the night world of the collective consciousness united the towers of Babel and of sleep.
Hmm.
So that interactiveness is the new nature of the digital life. It's not the tribal one-way trance of acoustic speech-based, preliterate humans.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the one-way effect of the I dominant in literate culture. It's of the nature of speech, which is interactive. Not speech environments, but it is like speech in the sense of it's give and take. Well, the digital media allows you to have give and take with massive, formerly massive media environments, which are generally one way.
Right. Well, to be more accurate than to use the word speech, it's like conversation is interactive. Speech isn't necessarily interactive. I could be pontificating, and that's not interactive.
That's interactive in the sense that people have to respond. But yes, the ability to have conversation, which McLuhan said was the best medium. He once said conversation is the most dramatic medium. And so, yeah, the Android meme is imitating the most anthropomorphic experience, the drama of cognition in conversation. But it's not just based on what you say in your mouth. It's body language. So the more that the media can show the whole body in interaction, it's approximating the anthropomorphic experience. That's why I call it the anthropomorphic physical on my chart.
Mm.
Everything's an extension and an attempt to get close to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So people are nowadays much concerned to set their houses in order. That includes going to shamanistic rituals to set their preliterate unconscious notion in order. Scrub it, but good. So people are nowadays much concerned to set their houses in order, a process of self-consciousness that has received large impetus from photography.
Right.
So we've come to the end of the McLuhan thread. Let's go back to the very first quote, since you brought up speech.